Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Hello, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Very well. Very, very well.
I'm good. We're all around the world, aren't we?
We are indeed. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Where are you guys right now? Or are you allowed to tell me secret locations?
I'm not in a secret location. I'm back in England.
Yeah.
I've been in England for a couple months. I just finished a show in New York and hadn't been able to get back almost throughout the entire pandemic. So I got back for the first time, like late February.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. That's great. What about you, Kat?
I'm currently in London, but just because I'm here, I just finished up a Comic-Con and I'm here visiting. And
oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Hanging out for a bit.
Well, if you're there for another week, my fiance will be there at the end of the week for a job he's doing. So y'all can
see. Oh, amazing.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Michael, thank you so much for joining us today on Return to the Shadows. We've been interviewing some really interesting creatives back and forth. And obviously, we couldn't complete our season one section of the show without bringing on the one and only writer of the Malick episode and one of the most influential writers in season one. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's so nice to see you guys again. It's really great to be here.
You as well. Michael, tell us a little about who you are, how you got involved in Shadowhunters, just for the clamoring fans out there.
Sure. So I was one of the executive producers of Shadowhunters. And, you know, I've been writing for about 20 years now, but I started off as a lawyer here in Los Angeles. And then one thing led. Yeah. No, I was raised to be a lawyer. And I loved law school. It's fantastic. One thing led to another. And through a longer story for another time or later in the podcast, whatever, I ended up quitting law after a few years to do some recurring parts on Days of Our Lives when Marlena was possessed by the devil. And so then after that, I quit to be an actor. So I was an actor for about 10 years. I did a lot of theater and a couple of shows. I was like Star Trek, Voyager, stuff like that. Segued over to a big career in voiceover, which I was really grateful for. So I still, like on some animated things, there's some characters that I did that I still get requested. So if my production schedule fits it, I do it.
Wow.
That's so cool.
Yeah. 2003, I started writing. Long story short, my friend Ed Dector, who you guys know, wrote the pilot and then asked me to come on while he was doing the pilot. and I was on it from the inception. And in fact, I cast you both. So there you go.
We have actually briefly touched on that.
So if you're looking for the man who's responsible.
There you go.
We will talk about it later. So I am doing a little digging now. It's so funny when we do these things. The producers give us these amazing briefs from people that I've worked with for 4 years. And there are things on it that I'm like, I didn't fucking know that. That's crazy. That's a real thing. Yeah. And speaking of, so you were in, you were one of the voice actors in the Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring game.
I was. Yeah, I'm Legolas.
Oh, I had to tell you, that series of games was like me and my brother's all-time favorite. We played
hours and hours.
Yeah, that's crazy. So that's my, like, and Soul Calibur as well was my stepfather's favorite game. So we used to play that together all the time too. Wow, so this is just like a crazy, I'm like fully starstruck. And like that I'm meeting the voice of one of my favorite games. That's wild.
Well, thank you. Now, animation still is. I mean, I absolutely adore it. I don't know if you guys know anime a lot. I did a lot of anime stuff. And so it was the Digimon and Naruto, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Metropolis, things like that. So it's been great. Really, really great group of people. So that's so
incredible.
Nice to hear, Dom. Thanks.
Yeah,
multi-talented individual you
so
are.
So cool. Like, as if I needed another reason to think you're the coolest fucking person alive. Oh. You were also Legolas. This is like crazy.
You're very kind. That was a while ago, but thank you. That's very nice of you to say.
Yeah. So then, coming back to your journey as a writer, what was it like transitioning into becoming an actor and then a writer? You've had so many transitions in your life. So lawyer to actor to writer. How was that process for you? What, you know, reinventing yourself so many times.
It's interesting because as I look back on it, I'm like, what was I thinking? But in the moment, doors just kind of, I mean, you make doors open for yourself. So I was, you know, it was hard work, but doors opened up for me at certain points and you just have to, I had to trust that it would work out and I jumped through it. I jumped through the door. So when I quit law, I was offered this recurring thing on Days of Our Lives where I couldn't reconcile the two anymore. And I remember going into my boss's office, my partner's office, and saying, I'm giving my notice. And he said, what law firm are you going to? And I said, Days of Our Lives. And he was like, what? So there was that. Love acting, love actors. Obviously, I love you guys. Seeing it from my end now, knowing how hard it is and how vulnerable you guys have to make yourselves and how open you always have to be and how you're always putting yourself on the line through every audition, it takes a certain amount of strength. And that was great for me for a while. But an opportunity through Warner Brothers opened up where I got into the Warner Brothers Drama Writers Workshop because I decided from my perspective, when I was entering a set acting, I wanted to be involved in the entire creation of the world as opposed to, you know, creating my character and doing that, which you guys do so beautifully. And so as I was looking around watching everybody doing all their stuff, I was like, I want to do that. And so I applied to the Warner Brothers Drama Writers Workshop and I wrote a couple of, back then they wanted spec scripts. I wrote a couple of them and I got in and then they ended up placing me on a few shows. So my first show was, way back when, remember, 7 episodes it lasted, Tarzan on the CW. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Yeah.
One Tree Hill and Tarzan premiered at the same time, and One Tree Hill lasted a lot longer.
Yeah.
But Eric Kripke was a fantastic boss, and he went on to do amazing things, obviously. So
that's
cool. that was my first job, my first writing job. Then you just keep doing more jobs, and then I was on Boston Legal for a number of years, which was fantastic. And then I wrote some pilots. Fast forwarding a long way away, I now jump back and forth between running TV shows and features. So Truth or Dare, I think they're doing a sequel to it, but I wrote Truth or Dare for Blumhouse and Universal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that did pretty well. I just turned in a new horror movie and I'm doing 2 pilots now and 2 other little movies. So
just a nice, easy little workload. I'm just working on fucking 18 scripts all at the same time.
it's worked out. The overall answer to your question is what I've discovered is like everybody has a unique voice to offer, no matter what they're doing, no matter what they're saying. Actors bring a unique perspective into the room. Writers bring a unique perspective as they enter a writer's room. Every element of my life, from law when I was a banking and finance attorney, so I know how to budget the shows, to acting, so I hopefully could communicate well with you guys when you guys needed stuff, to writing. It all lends itself to running shows. And so I kind of found my path, and I'm really grateful.
Amazing. So what is there, as far as writing goes, is there a world in which you feel most comfortable? Is there an element that you feel most, you just mentioned that you're doing a few, you just turned in a horror and you're writing a horror. So I'm curious if that's where you feel most at home, or if you would span out and do, you know, a rom-com at some point, or like, where's your heart at?
Well, it's funny. It depends on my mood. So writing horror is, writing horror is very cathartic. But what I have found is that I like doing a lot of different things, and it really is based ultimately on the character. In everything I do, I like to add a little, everything I do, I like to add a little humor to it. So even in the scariest things, you need to laugh to let that release. Mm-hmm. I like writing really, hopefully, strong female characters is one of the things I really love writing. So if ever, like, my dream show would have been to write on The West Wing, you know, and to write CJ. That would have been brilliant. You know, that's like my pinnacle of what I like, of what I strive for. But, I'm writing a rom-com now, a TV movie. And so it's really based on the characters and who, what world I want to live in for a while. But I also really love scaring people. So,
Yeah. And that is arguably one of the hardest things to write, I think, is horror. Most of these genres are fairly saturated, but I think with horror, the whole thing is like shock. And if you know those shocks are coming, then it's not as scary. It's always scary for me. If I know someone's going to jump out at me, it's always scary. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. I can barely watch Scooby-Doo. But it's not even a joke. It's like embarrassing.
It's true. We've watched horror movies together. I'm just as bad.
But I'm excited to see what you come up with, because, horror's tricky.
Well, and especially for horror fans, they know what's coming for the most part because they've seen it all. So it takes a really ingenious writer to overcome that.
Well, thank you. But the interesting thing, you have to care about the characters. Like, you have to care if someone's in danger. If I don't care about them, then I'm like, all right, so they die. but you know what I mean? It's like, but you automatically, like, I don't know if you guys ever worked with Lucy Hale or not. She was on a show I did years ago called Privileged. One of her first, I was a mid-level producer, and she was brilliant on that. And then life kind of took us in the same direction, and she ended up starring in Truth or Dare. But automatically love Lucy and what she brings to it. And so if something happens to her and the character she's building, then you care. The types of horror that I find really amazing right now, and I'm gonna, Aaron, oh my goodness. He did the Toni Collette horror movie, Why Am I Blanking Right Now?
You know
who I'm talking about.
Hereditary. I do know. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Those types of movies, those really excite me. That's what really scares me now. Those are just genius. Like, and Summer, why is my brain not working?
Midsommar.
He did the follow-up, Midsommar, with
Ari Aster directed.
That's it, Ari Aster. Yeah. I try and study all of his things just to see if I can keep learning.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the horror journey, I suppose. It's fun.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, with circling back to Shadowhunters, you were obviously so pivotal in that and responsible for some of the most iconic moments in the show. So when you first heard about this story and this process, these characters, did you do any kind of research in particular, or what were you first taken with in this world?
It's interesting. I had seen the feature years earlier. Mm-hmm. I had not read the books at that point. When Ed asked me to join, I read all the books and I just fell in love with the world. And so what I ended up, when you adapt books into a TV series, it gives you so many opportunities to expand on characters that had a narrow lane in the book just for space, but wonderful moments were teed off that you could say, oh, I can follow that. And for me, the Malik romance, I learned all about shipping through Shadowhunters. The Malik romance, obviously spoke to me deeply. And I think even today, I still get emails from, like, the fans are so amazing. And I still get emails from some fans who the show helped them come out to their parents. I get emails from some parents who watched the show with their kids and said, you helped me understand my child more. And wow. That's the power of what Shadowhunters did and what TV can do. And so I took it very, very seriously. It was really important. And I think it came off pretty well.
Yeah, I think a few people liked it, you know,
yeah,
just a couple.
Yeah, semi-popular. Just so that's couple. This is an interesting thing, I think, to touch on. And again, if any of it's, you know, too personal, you don't want to answer, then just say.
Sure.
But how much of your, of like the elements of like yourself and your discovery, like how much of that plays into what you're writing, the characters you develop, where you take them, this, that, and the other?
It plays a huge thing. And I'm kind of when it comes to that stuff, I'm an open book. I mean, I did a whole It Gets Better video for Freeform through Shadowhunter. Mm-hmm. So I'm out there. So yeah, those stories, I mean, the best experiences I have in writing is when I can take the material and also infuse personal experiences that I hope are universal, you know, for the scripts. And just there's moments in the Malik journey vis-a-vis the family relationships. I came out later in life. I was engaged to a wonderful woman, and then later, now I'm engaged to an amazing guy. Learning about yourself and living authentically, and like all of those moments, I think really grounded in a personal resonance that then extends to the audience. If you believe it and you're moved by it, then you hopefully will move other people and speak to them.
Yeah. That's lovely, man. That's we've spoken about that episode in particular. It's tricky because we're doing the rewatch somewhat chronologically. So we get to elements and we're like, oh, we want to talk about this. And we're like, fuck, we can't yet because we haven't reached the episode. But we did just speak about the Malik episode. We recorded that episode, which is amazing. And what we talked about was there are so many elements in it that had to come together to make this like really beautifully profound piece, from Matt and Harry's acting to the directing to like putting together the set design to the writing. And I think because each of those people had a fairly substantial chunk of their heart in it, it really was this like amazing, amazing thing to be a part of. So, thank you for a little chunk of your heart in that. I hope you got it back.
That's true.
Thank you. I remember you guys did a beautiful job in the episode as well. I mean, you know, just the looks everybody shot each other. I remember a particular moment where you two connected with a look as the vows were about to be expressed. And I think it was an incredibly powerful moment. But I mean, even down to like every department did really beautiful work, and we were all, you know, scrambling that week to make sure we could get everything in there. I remember running. I was personally running down a road in the rain, trying to grab like somebody who thought they were like let go for the day, and then they had to come back. And I was just like, "No, we need to shoot you again." You know, and it's like, and it was raining, and I'm soaking. And then I believe Kat, you wore a beautiful green dress, and we had to figure out like what jewels were there and what, you know, where it was cut and what we, like even the wardrobe department.
How to put the microphone on.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah. And Dom, your suit, the whole thing.
Everything.
And the hair, Dom, the hair. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
Dom's hair.
Let's not even talk about it. We literally just spoke to Ryan Reed, who is the designer. We just finished talking to him.
Yeah.
Today. And it, like, that was the whole thing. Cause I think the note season one was like, we don't want to. We did the fight scene in the pandemonium, and they like the guys up top went, we don't want Dom's hair in his face ever. Like, what the fuck do you mean? We're doing like a martial arts based show. Like, what is going on? This whole thing.
Yeah, that was. There's a lot of navigating even behind the scenes that you guys don't even see. So
right, I'm sure.
Lots of meetings before we even start shooting.
Exactly. So let me ask you, if we're going back to like, you know, meetings pre the fact.
Sure.
What was casting like? Like,
tell us.
And then both now you're an EP, so you're looking at like potentially the sellability of people, you know, some the people who are going to be able to hold these characters for a very long period of time. And then also as a writer, you've already put your heart and soul into these characters, you know, developing them as they are. So you have sort of, you almost have two voices in that room, right?
Yeah. Well, it's true. And Dom and I have spoken a great deal about our perspective on the casting process. And we've heard from some of the other actors, but we haven't had a chance yet to hear from someone on your side of the table.
I want to hear your perspective.
Well, I just remember running into a wall. I don't know.
Yeah. It's casting a pilot is a marathon. you know. And I actually remember seeing both of your auditions, and Ed was very nice, and he sort of put me kind of in charge of casting. I mean, in charge is the wrong word, but because I was an actor, and then the other executive producer of it, I was in the process from the whole time. So, Kat, I remember you read our first week, I think, and you were on another show where your hair was super blonde.
Mm-hmm. I was on The Fosters.
That's right. You were on Peter's show, and I remember saying to Peter, "Can we get her out?" And like we were chatting even, and Peter's an old little friend of mine. But here's a small little thing. One of the things that we like, you have to keep looking and keep looking. And Dom, I got a story about you too. Keep looking and keep looking and keep looking. And it was, does she have red hair? And like, or would she mind dyeing her hair red? And that was the stumbling block for a moment. And I'm like, of course she will. Let's ask her. Let's, you know what I mean? And
ask the question.
And then ultimately it came back at the very end. We went through like hundreds and hundreds of people, and you were always in there. And then hundreds and hundreds of people, and then no one compared. And then it was sort of like, wait a minute, why don't we just ask her? And I think your hair is naturally red, isn't it? Like,
it is.
Do you have auburn or red hair?
And it was, it's naturally strawberry blonde, yeah.
Yeah, we're like, oh. So, and I'm colorblind, so I can't see red, but you know what I mean.
Oh, no.
So even those little things, like you spoke to us of that. And then Dom, I remember you came in. I remember sitting in the room, and I'm next to Ed. And when I was an actor, the worst thing you could hear, I thought, was you walk in, you do one read, and you go, hey, thanks for coming in. And then you leave and your soul just spills out of you, and you're like, what just happened? Yeah. And I remember you walked in, and I was like, oh, that's him. I just remember seeing it. And then you read, and I look at Allison, and it was, oh, yeah, that's him. And then Ed, who liked you, just said, hey, thanks for coming in.
He wasn't sure, was he? Yeah, he wasn't sure.
Well, he wasn't not sure. It was just he had to do so many different things, you know, that he was just going to make the decision later. But you got the, hey, thanks for coming in after one without any adjustments.
Yeah.
And I was like, he's going to call Rob Marsala, and then Rob's going to get a new one, and oh no, and I'm friends with Rob, and what am I going to do? And I was like, Ed, give him, like, and so you left, and I saw your face go, oh, and I just wanted to say, don't worry.
Yeah.
And then at the end, we all had a conversation. I think we played your Taylor Swift video, and it's oh, that's the guy. And so then it kind of, it went from there, but it's like the soul crushing, like, thanks for coming in
thing.
It's brutal. Yeah. So what you guys have to go through,
That's the conversation you have afterwards. Yeah. Like, you know, as you say, Rob Marsala is my very talented manager. And that's the conversation. You call them afterwards, and you decompress, and you go, yeah, this is how it went, whatever. Yeah. And if you say those words, you know, to your manager, you go, oh, I got the, thanks for coming in. Both of you collectively go, well, we're not getting this one. Right. Like that's just, you know that that's the response. So that is, you're absolutely right. You walk out of those rooms like, damn it.
But
there you go.
I guess the factoid to take away is, that's not always a bad thing. Sometimes you'll come into a room and there'll just be this vibe. You go, oh yeah, that's the person. And then they read and they read really well. And you're like, yeah, I don't need to see anymore. And then like, if I need to see more or further scenes, that's in the callback. And then the next callback and then the studio test. And then I remember walking into Freeform where all you guys are nervously sitting in the lobby, you know, and we're all having you sign your contracts. And I'm like, good luck.
Yeah.
I only tested for one thing in my entire life when I was an actor. And you guys go through this all the time. So I'm like, they're old hats, but it's like, oof.
You know, interestingly, it's not really a thing anymore. Like it's, I've done probably in the last like 4 years, I've done like two face-to-face tests because it's now all digital.
Right.
They just send you tapes over. It's all done. So that whole stress of like sitting in a, essentially like a theater with the stands full of like the execs at Disney, then the execs at Constantine, then the show execs and the writers and McGee and all of you guys. And you're just sat there like shitting yourself, hoping you don't like mess something up. That's kind of gone now. That stress is kind of alleviated,
although
which I'm
I will say,
massively grateful for.
For Walker, I had to, the new Walker Independence pilot I just did, I had to test on Zoom and do chemistry reads on Zoom.
Really?
So it was that
I've
same.
Done that.
And I actually would rather be in person because doing that on Zoom, you're in you're in your house, and so it's already kind of this weird thing, and it's
familiarity.
It just pulls you out entirely, and you don't have the same kind of focus and the same environmental, and trying to have chemistry with your love interest, and it's so hard.
Even just auditioning from your home when you're trying to be a character, separating yourself from who you are in real life, I imagine that's crazy hard. So
it's tricky.
Yeah. It is.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Once you sort of start developing relationships in this, you see it more and more where like, oh, I know someone in this room like this. So this feels a lot safer. Yeah. This, even if it doesn't go my way, like at least I know this person's kind of in my corner.
And
sort of, it seems like we had that person in you. Yay. We just didn't know right away, but we did have that person in you sort of behind the scenes fighting our corner, which is such a lovely thing. And we've told, I think both Kat and I have told those stories that you just told on the podcast, talking about you, excited to have you on because we're like, Michael really was in our corner sort of throughout. And we used you, I remember a bunch of times using you in season one as like, the guy I could really come and talk to as the confidant, like, I don't get this. Like, can you please talk me through this? You know what I mean? Like, and you did, like you understood like talking to us, which was really special.
It's always nice to have a sounding board.
Oh yeah. Well, you guys are putting your faces, your likenesses, your whole being out there. You know, I get to be behind a computer or in a video village sort of telling people what to do, but you guys are out there. So the more comfortable and the more the safer a space that you can provide an actor, I think the better performance you're going to get ultimately. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think
can you write me roles in everything you're writing from here on out?
Yes, please.
I just work with you more. I'll be
barista number 7. I don't care. I just want to work with you.
Yeah,
I would love that. I would love to work with you guys as well. You guys really enjoy.
That begs an interesting question. So when you're writing something, and whether it's on Shadowhunters or something else, did anyone ever interpret something you wrote or create the performance of it in a way that surprised you or kind of caught you off guard or something you didn't expect?
It's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the joy of writing. Like I'll have one way, like in my head as I'm typing it up and I sort of act it out with my dog as I wander around the house, we pace and I type. But then that's the joy of what we do. Everybody brings their own thing to it. And then you're like, oh, I didn't think of it in that way. And that's even better. You know, there's like when I was writing Boston Legal, James Spader can spin a closing argument like nobody can spin a closing argument. Like and Mary McCormack on In Plain Sight would take material, and you guys too. I mean, I don't want to embarrass you because you're here, but like, you know, can take material and just elevate it. And you guys did beautiful work as well. Like there were moments where it's the alchemy of actors spending years together that then you become the character so that it's not just me typing it and telling you what to say. It's, hey, I've been being this person for the past 3 years. I don't think this person would do this. And then a conversation happens. And then if one thing needs to happen because the story needs to move forward, that conversation helps make it occur in a more organic way.
Well, and that's something I always was so grateful for with the Shadowhunters Writers Room is that, and with our producers, is that if, you know, as Dom and I, we cared so much about these characters and still do, clearly. And if we had a question or a thought or something we didn't understand, you were actually open to it. You didn't just listen to us and go, okay, go off and do your job. You actually took it into consideration and would either tell us, oh no, this has to happen, but here's why, or there was a discussion and a conversation, and it ultimately, I think, led to a deeper, richer story for all of the characters.
Yeah, that's the only way I like to work. I have a policy now for the rest of my career that I'm not going to work with people I don't like, and I'm not going to work with people that aren't collaborative. Like, it's only nice people and professional people, which is most people. You know, like, I think we're working in an industry.
You know. I also think that should be... That should just be the case with any career. Like there are times when you're forced, you have no choice. Like you work with people that you dislike, but if you can avoid that in the future, why wouldn't you?
Right.
Like, why would you put yourself back in that situation? It makes perfect sense to me. And I think that's a wonderful rule to have. So listeners, Michael Rietz is spinning gold. It's worth taking a note on that one, I think. I got to say as well, dude, like you haven't aged.
I have no hair.
It's like 7 years.
Oh, that's so sweet. Well, first of all.
Your face, you look amazing.
Well, thank you.
Is it Deal with the Devil? What happened?
There's a painting in the in my attic that keeps aging.
this is getting older and older.
Well, thank you. But, you know, life is good, you know. I'm getting married in October. Like I'm happy. My parents
are so still exciting.
Doing well.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Mom and Pop, you know, I live 15 minutes away from them, and dad's in his 90s and mom's in her 80s.
Oh, that's amazing.
They're all excited to get gussied up and come to the wedding. So it's going to be great. It's we're getting married because we want to.
Yeah.
What a wonderful, again, another wonderful message to get out there.
Yeah.
What is wedding planning like?
Fun.
I'm now sort of approaching that age that like,
I was like, do we have news to drop, Dom? You know? What?
No.
Hello?
Decker's gonna be listening, being like,
oh,
what?
Wait a minute. I was like, I was about to say something that would have to be edited. Never mind. So hold on. Let me gather myself. Okay, back to wedding planning. It's fun. You know, my fiance is an international event planner, so he kind of knows what he's doing and stuff like that.
Well,
but
there you go.
Amazing.
That's why, like, it's fun, I'm sure.
Yeah. And it's like we're planning this thing together. Where our families are going to come together. And it's just going to be a big celebration.
Amazing. How did you guys meet?
OkCupid, one of those online things.
Oh, no way.
Yeah,
really?
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm just about to go to one of my best friend's wedding, and they met on Tinder.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like one of the very few, like, that where the stars just aligned that time. And they are so massively in love. And I can't imagine either one of them without the other one, you know?
Yeah, we sort of looked at it. I guess I did an ad for OkCupid. Are they still around?
Yeah.
We sort of looked at it.
Did you really?
No, I didn't do an ad for it. No. I think
I see.
By plugging them on your thing.
We now accidentally did an ad.
By plugging them on your thing, bless you, Kat.
Yeah.
But, was I not supposed to? But anyway, I just want to say bless you anyway.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I sneezed.
for all who didn't know.
My girlfriend and I just had a very similar, like during the quarantine, we were doing like an online sort of games group thing that Kat's part of.
Yeah, it was a part of it. I got to watch the whole thing.
I saw this girl in
cute.
One of her little squares, the way you're seeing us now, like in one of those little squares. And I was like, she is super cute. But you know, you get that sense, like she has a boyfriend. I can see in her eyes, she has a boyfriend. Not asked the question, but she has a boyfriend. And then I saw her face on one of the dating apps and I was like, huh. Question mark. So I sent her a text and the rest is kind of, I didn't even send her a text. I think I like super liked her. It just showed how keen I was in that moment.
So
I was like,
cute.
I like paid money to super like this
is that
person.
A thing?
I don't know.
I don't know what super liking is. What's super liking?
It's like, it's the equivalent on these like dating swipe things where like, instead of just swiping, you can like super swipe essentially. Like, and it shows them that I'm super interested.
That's great.
I came in strong, Michael. I came in super keen.
So you were like the Tinder stalker.
Yeah, that's how she likes to put it for sure. Yeah. Her and her parents like to call me that.
Yeah. And Kat, what about you? You didn't expect it to go this way, did you?
No, I didn't. But yeah, I'm aside from work, I'm really happy. I'm in a lovely, dating a lovely guy, and it's
I love that.
It's really fantastic.
Woo!
I know.
I'm
I haven't
really
even talked to you
yet.
About this yet, Dom.
Oh my God, are we? I'm sorry.
No,
by the way, if any of this is none of my business, I just feel like
no,
I'm
it's great.
Not at all.
No, it's funny.
Exclusive.
It's funny because looking back on Shadowhunters and like all the relationships that developed, and you know, it really taught us a lot about relationships. And I think the pandemic too, because my boyfriend and I met during the pandemic, and it's one of those things where you meet the right person, and the pandemic kind of showed us how important those human connections are and how important it is to just focus on life as well as work, which is something I never really did.
Well, you know what, because and I you know, I find this in a lot of actors, and maybe you guys can tell me, it's all-consuming at some point in a lot of ways, where you're selling yourself. Like you're creating this business, you're selling a product, the product is you. And you're trying to make that product better and better and better. And there's so many elements to that, both the acting, and then you get to a certain point where you have to do the publicity and you have to do this. And then, unfortunately, the loss of a certain sense of privacy, where that also then starts invading things.
Yeah.
Finding that balance, it's really important, I think, to always say, I'm really fortunate and I really love what I do professionally, but the other cup has to be full or else things are just going to get out of whack. You know, and I'm so glad to hear you both are navigating that beautifully. It's really, really nice to see.
And you as well, man.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's made my heart feel really full.
Aww.
Speaking of difficulties, balancing, were there episodes or either in Shadowhunters or in anything, is there anything that you found particularly difficult to write? Is there anything you sat down and got the block for a second and you were wow, I really don't know.
Yeah. And how did you overcome it?
Every writer always faces blocks. And so, yeah, even on Shadowhunters, you face blocks. So I guess two things. One, when I get writer's block, sometimes you have to step away from your computer and then think, okay, what do these characters really want? And what do I want to say with this? And then I do, in this new house we built, there's this, in all of my houses, I've kind of have this path from my computer down a hall through a kitchen or whatever it is. Like I can walk in a circle and my dog always, like I start pacing around the house and my dog always follows me. And then when it breaks, I run to the computer and my dog jumps on her chair and I start typing again.
Cute.
And so usually if I get a block, I'll go to what's this character about? Like, what is this character feeling at this moment? Because usually I get a block happens when I just don't know what's happening next, like what this character wants. I'm just trying to write to a result as opposed to say, okay, what would really happen? And then usually it sorts itself out after hitting your head against the wall for a while.
Right.
Production wise, executive producing a show, you're juggling a lot of things. And so there's scripts you're writing, scripts you're shooting, scripts you're in post on, and they're all happening at the same time and you all have to keep it on budget. And I'm sure you all remember those shooting days where at the end of the days you have the 82 producers huddling in Video Village going, we got it, move on. It's like, you know, and it's like, one more take, no, you know. being able to navigate around certain things. So like you write a big battle scene and then it ends up being three people fighting in an alley, you know, because of production. But there are ways to make it work, you know, there are ways to make it work that you have to always recognize. And it's one of the things that has helped me, I guess, is there's a studio and there's people giving you a lot of money every episode to make a movie. They're giving you money and you have to return their investment, you know, on budget and on time. And so if something's going to go skyrocketing over budget, you have to find a way to rewrite it so that your intent can come around, can come across while still recognizing the business aspect of this, because it's not just endless money being thrown at something. Those are the challenges.
Well, yeah. Cause that's such an, that's such an interesting sort of parallel that you in particular, is very few people that we're going to get on this show that have this like creative business in parallel at all times, you know? So it's such an interesting thing to hear that, like having to balance the, like, what of my creative side do I sacrifice to make sure that the whole thing gets done? But then what am I unwilling to sacrifice to for the money or whatever it is? You know, it's such a tricky, I couldn't do
it. Yeah, I'd say it's not, it's not always even a sacrifice. It's like, okay, how can we alter it so that we can still get everything emotionally that we want, while being able to pay for it, you know? There's just hard realities to show running and producing that you want to give you guys the best material to perform, while at the same time you're having 82 people yelling at you and you're getting 90,000 texts in Video Village saying, pull it, move on. You're like, give me a minute.
So, yeah. There's always a couple producers that turn up. The line producer is normally one. If the line producer turn up to set at the end of the day, you're like, oh, we're like, running late. Boy. We're behind. Boy. We need to get going.
But that's one reason that I think Shadowhunters became such a beautiful show is that, as with any TV show, we had limited resources. But all of our departments, as you said, Michael, really came together and really put their all and all of their passion into getting creative and working together and sharing those resources to figure out, okay, how can we all help each other to create a cohesive world? And you particularly saw it, I think, one of the first times. It takes, you know, it takes a few episodes for a show to gel and figure things out.
Yeah.
But the Malik episode in season one is really where all of those elements meshed in such
that
a beautiful
special.
Way.
Yeah.
It really was.
It was special.
I got two stories on them, two behind the scenes stories on the Malik.
Ooh, episode. tell us. Spill the tea.
Amazing.
One is you two guys, like I watched you both when you weren't being shot.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on shows where the lead actors would shoot their stuff and not stay for coverage of their partners. They would not.
Yeah.
You guys, there's two very specific moments, and I don't even know who you were rehearsing with, but I remember the guest stars that you guys were working with wanted to run their lines, and you both pulled them aside off to the side, and you just said, let's run lines. And I was like, we've got really quality leads who are in this to help the overall show. It's not let me storm back to my trailer and lock the door. It's, you know, you guys always, I always watched everybody. And you guys always were generous with your time, especially with the guest actors who came in. You both worked with people and said, hey, if you need more time, and you always stayed for coverage. It was great.
Yeah.
And then in the actual wedding, I just remember we were looking at it and it's Stephanie, right? Stephanie was the actress.
Yeah.
Yes.
Stephanie.
She's wonderful. And she, and we were like, okay, how's this going to look? We were setting it up and literally like 2 minutes before we were shooting, we're like, wait a minute. She's not holding flowers. Like she has nothing in her hands. She's walking in. She's like, what do I do with my hands? We're like, oh, geez, what do we do? I remember running through the whole building like, who's got flowers? And then I just quickly props her and grabbed the red flowers. I'm like, they look beautiful, fine. and the seven, they're just like, and then she walked out and it was gorgeous. So those flowers, like 90 seconds beforehand, weren't there. And so we just threw the flowers and I'm like, hold them. And then she
held them. That's what you do with your hands. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And well, she did a beautiful job.
She really did a beautiful
job. She did
do
an amazing job.
We were talking about that the other day. We had so many guest stars who came on and just absolutely smashed it and just committed to the world as much as we did. But, you know, there's, Dom and I have been that guest star on set so many times.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I mean, I'm sure I can speak for you on this, Dom, but we want to be that person. We want to foster, we want to be the leads that we wanted or had on those shows, and mm-hmm. and not only lead but host these people and make them feel comfortable, because that's when people will do their best work.
That's a great way of putting it. And you did.
It's the Meryl Streep thing, isn't it? Is it Meryl Streep or Helen Mirren? I can't remember which one.
They're both great.
They said they're better off camera. They make an intentional choice to be 110% off camera.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, because the scene, like, you don't look good in a scene because of just you.
Right.
You look good in a scene because you're both good, because the scene looks good. You know, the James Bond thing of, like, who is your favorite James Bond? I think the more interesting question is, who is your favorite villain?
Right. Yeah.
Because your favorite James Bond was only James Bond against a villain. Right. You know what I mean? You have to have the two to play with. So I know for myself and Kat and many of the actors that I've worked with in my career foster a similar sort of ethos. And the reality is, you know, between you, me and the pets and everyone else listening, they pay us a fortune to do this. Like, for the concept of people being selfish with their time doesn't make any sense to me. Like, it's such a silly thing to do.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic, that's a literal pro, and it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having pink lady apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
I've had circumstances where the actors have not been you guys, where mm-hmm. the lead actor would mock people and mock the crew and wow. yell and... And finally, I just stepped in and I said, we're cutting the scene. And the actor was like, what are you talking about? And I said, I'm rewriting it. You're done for the day.
Wow.
And they were like, what?
Wow. So that's an interesting question. The three of us all having worked with these people, these kinds of people in the past, like at what point you have sort of a somewhat special power in that you are the EP that has the responsibility of being able to say, no, no, unacceptable. And also the writer with the responsibility of being like, I can actually change this. Like, I can actually write this out right now on my laptop. Well,
you pull that card very rarely and you have to get approvals by lots of people. So I didn't just willy-nilly just go and do that because it impacts a lot of things.
Yeah.
But by the time it gets to that point, an individual's behavior will be known. And so it's advice to anybody entering a set. Everybody watches, everybody knows, and everybody, even up to the network executives, knows what's happening on a set. So just play nice and be professional. Everybody's work. The crew works the hardest. They're carrying heavy, heavy things. And for someone to come in and start not acting professionally around people who are breaking their backs to make them look good, that really rubs me wrong. And it's just, it's not right.
I think as well, as far as the producing side of it, and I've not done this yet, but I think anyone doing anything needs to be given at least one opportunity to rectify their behavior. You need to be told, this sucks. You're making people uncomfortable. This is happening. You've made a mistake. Whatever it is, I'm making you aware that this is not acceptable. This is not how we do things here. And then fingers crossed that person changes and you're like, oh shit, okay, great, cool. And then it's a better environment for everybody. The other side of that is it doesn't change, or, you're told where to go, whatever it is. And then you're like, well, a change needs to be made somewhere. And you're the one breaking people's backs. So
you never want to write someone off a show. You always want to give people the opportunity. Like, I always find it funny, like actors on magic shows that have supernatural magic-y things going on. They don't realize, poof, spell is cast. You can be turned into a new
person. Gone.
But no one wants to do that. But I also imagine from an actor's perspective, and you guys tell me, you guys are also in a bubble sometimes. And so I go back and forth from Toronto to Los Angeles, and you guys are living in this bubble. So sometimes I wonder if what's going on in that bubble where you're wondering what's going on in LA. Or the communication has to be constant, I think, for it to really gel.
I agree. But then also the other side of it as well, where it's like, I couldn't imagine being a writer with a difficult actor who's constantly calling, I don't like this, I want this change, blah, blah, blah. So there's that balance of communication where it's like, I know for me, the things that I tend to call up about, and I always talk to myself about it, which is the first sign of madness. That's not great. But is this a hill I'm willing to die on? Is this something that I believe in enough to actually cause someone else more work? Because that's what it's going to do at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's why I think Shadowhunters did work so well, is because we figured out you all left your doors open for us to feel comfortable enough to, I mean, this was, my first big lead job and my first job where I had any semblance of place to say anything about the words on the page and the character I was playing. And the fact that you made it such a comfortable space to take that creative authority and go, hey, you have the full story, but I'm boots on the ground. There's a couple things that, I need more information, or this doesn't necessarily make sense, or I just being able to have a conversation. And a lot of people, in any industry don't realize that just communication and having a conversation about something is the easiest way to just make everything easier.
Being heard.
And
you're being heard. Right. Yeah. I think from both sides. Yeah. Being heard is such a gift.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is one of the most important things. Like, everybody needs to be heard. And sometimes you're not always going to get the answer you want. But what I would hopefully do, and I don't know if I ever did this to you guys. I think I did, too. That's the wrong way of saying. I would say, I would hear you out. And then if it was a super stressful day, I'd try and smile. and then I would say, if there's different ways you want to say something, we need to get one as written. And then if there's time, let's play with it is usually because we would have a conversation about it and I would hear you out and understand where you're coming from. I also understand whether it was network notes that we have to respond to. So there's so many different levels that we don't have power to change. They need it. It's this show running. You're sort of in the middle and you're navigating, making sure everything happens. And it's a wonderful job, but it's usually I'll be like, all right, let's make sure we get one as written and then let's play with it if there's time, and that's kind of how I navigate that.
Yeah. Which is smart.
Well, if it's dumb, I'll usually be like, okay, dumb. And then we'll just do it how I want to do it.
We've definitely had that conversation. I remember it.
I felt so bad. There was one time where I was teasing you. I'm not even going to go into it. And then I was like, oh no, did I hurt his feelings? And then you pulled one on me because you pretended you were upset.
Oh no. Yeah.
We did have that relationship, didn't we? We really did play with each other quite a lot, which is nice. It's such a British thing, which is it's a difficult thing for me to navigate when I, especially when I work in the States or with Americans. I'm like, I'll say stuff and I'll play and I'll toy with people, and then every now and then I get that American or a reaction from an American that's like, and I'm like, oh shit, that was it. That was the line I shouldn't have crossed to it right there. Yeah.
And with Kat, like in the best possible way, I always viewed you as sort of like my little sister that I need to protect because you're carrying this big burden.
Yeah.
And so to the extent that it could be lightened, or at least, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times I think Clary had wonderful things to do, but you know, in the whole Abbott and Costello of it, you had to be the straight person, you know, where everybody else is going wild.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I'm Clary. It's like you had a ton of like really solid, important things to do that we all appreciated, obviously, as did you, Dom. But it's like, you know, you're going through this journey of a girl who didn't know her past or her future. And you're, you know, we're following your journey.
Yeah.
You were like the spine that kind of had to be like, okay, I'm not always getting the wild, wacky things to do. But, you know, like you carried that beautiful.
Well, thank you. Well, and to that point, I never felt stagnant as a character, not once in the entire series. And that's always a gift when you're, you know, as Dom can attest to, working on a series for years, it can be, you don't always necessarily see the character growth that you want to. And with Shadowhunters, I always felt that. And especially in the lovely metaphor you just put forth, always feeling like you can trust your writers and your producers and going, I think we've got this. Or, you know, I know in episode 12, in Clary and Lydia's scene, we had no time.
Yeah.
It was the end of a long day and we were out of time.
Oh, I felt terrible. I even remember that. Yeah. I was weeping.
But, I know, but we just did the rewatch of this episode and I remember being so hopeful that we got what we needed, and we did. Because the crew came together and did it, and you were able to, and our director and everyone else kind of came together
James
and did it.
James did a great, it was James,
it was
right?
James.
It was
James.
On 12. Yeah. Really.
Wow, your memory is pretty impeccable. It was 7 years ago and you've done so much since then. This is really quite impressive.
I'm my age, I feel the age in my joints right
now.
That was a really good experience. And where'd we stay? Oh, the you guys stayed in a different place. They always put us up right near Blue Jay Stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we stayed around that area, though. We didn't move far from there for all those years.
Close.
Wow. I love my life here because I'm based here in my home. You know, acting is exciting. And it's like, it takes a certain strength of character to be a journeyman actor and say, hey, I'm going to lift up my life and move it to Toronto for 4 years. I'm going to move it to London. I'm going to move it to LA. Like, how is that like for you?
It's nuts, dude. It's really nuts. And the tricky thing for me is like that period in between, you know, your contractual obligations, so that you, whatever it is from last day of filming, 6 months, 12 months, whatever it is, you're like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going back. Do you keep apartments? Is it cheaper to get rid of the apartment? Like, do I send myself back to where I'm going? Like, we don't know. And even Shadowhunters, like we'd started seeing the reaction before it had aired. So we sort of somewhat knew, like, people are excited about this, really excited about it. But it was still 6 months. We didn't know for 6 months. And during that time, then contractually, you're not allowed to do other things and whatever. And you're just like in this, I'm in it now with Partner Track. You're just in this holding pattern where it's like, what do we do? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the, you know, so it's tricky. But again, when you're lucky enough that something goes on, we were on this for 4 years. When you're lucky enough that that's the case.
Yeah.
You know, picking up your suitcases and moving into a spot, it does become, like Emerald said it the best the other day when we were talking to her, she said it becomes a home away from home. And it does. You make it like your little home away from home. Even my trailer was like, by the end, it had my PlayStation in it.
Like,
and like,
sitting out there.
I had photos up by the end. But it's so...
I remember. Yeah. It's adorable.
But it's nice because when you're working with such a great group of people, both in the writer's room and on set, you don't feel as alone. And we're kind of this, you know, traveling circus where we're kind of the, you know, the modern nomads of the world that can kind of just pick up and go, all right, I'm going to just bloom where I'm planted here and use my off time to care, to see the people that I love that I don't get to see. And it, you learn to prioritize in that way, but it
really, station 11.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it forces you to live in the present and live in the moment as much as you possibly can.
Yeah. I'm so happy Emerald's working. She's working with my friend Gloria.
Aww.
And I'm like, it's just such a lovely show. I'm so happy for her.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So if you talk to her, say hi.
I will.
Definitely. So when we did Shadowhunters, we when Kat and I were made aware of it, it was to series. It was straight to series already.
Yeah.
So we knew that it was 13 episodes they're going to do, which is pretty uncommon for a TV show for them to put, you know, 13 episodes worth of money into something before it's whatever. So when you joined, was what information did you know, and what was the process through there? Did you still have to write a pilot and get that approved, or was it did you know that you were writing 13 episodes of story?
I didn't write the pilot. Ed Dector wrote the pilot.
Right.
I came on after when he was staffing up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Ed and I think Pete. You guys remember Pete?
Yeah. Oh, we know Pete.
He was Ed's assistant at the time, and then he's grown into an amazing writer.
Yeah.
And I just went to his wedding.
I know. Congrats, Pete.
No way.
We love you, Pete.
Yeah, Pete. He, like, they had to write the pilot and then, from what I understand, get it approved, signed off on. And then I think they internationally financed it. I'm not quite sure how it worked. It was one of the first models where they did it that way and then took the package to Freeform, I believe.
Oh, interesting.
But they'd be able to answer that much better than I could.
Interesting.
So when I came on, I knew there were going to be 13 episodes for the first season.
That's so you were, you were with us. Because that's the interesting thing. I suppose the follow-up question to that is, I get asked quite a lot, do you prefer doing movies or TV? Both have elements that I love and both have elements that are quite difficult. And the main one is when you're doing TV, you don't know the full story arc of this character ever at any point, really.
Right.
If you're lucky enough to get 13 episodes, you might know the rough like outline of what happens in those 13, but you don't know season two, you don't know season three. And with a movie, save for sort of alterations or additions, you kind of know this arc and you can plan for this arc. So you guys, when you were in the writing room, when you were producing, you were setting it up like a 13 episode sort of movie. Like you knew the button ends of what was going to happen. That's awesome.
Yeah. Usually when you're going into a new season of a TV show, whether it's a season two, three, whatever, or you're pitching out your first, you need to present sort of like the arcs. Clary will start here by episode three or four. She'll kind of go through this. She'll go here. And by the end of season one, our cliffhanger will have Clary doing this. We'll do that through each character. And so, and then the network gives you lots and lots and lots of notes. The studio gives you, and you sort of negotiate and you navigate and they say, okay, go to script on those. And so we kind of had an idea. But, you know, there were times that fruitful conversations were had where there were differences of opinion, I believe, where they were trying to figure out, should we end the season on this or should we have it be mid-season? But we'd already written like 13 episodes. So they're like, can you condense those 13 into six and then just write six more? We're like, well, and then they go, oh, no, wait, go back. And like, so there was a lot of, and it's all done with the best of intentions. I think people are trying to figure out the writer's room craziness is before things start shooting when you're trying to navigate all that stuff. So that's where the hurricane hits the writer's room a lot of the times.
Got it. So interesting. Is there one you prefer? Do you prefer writing the pilot and then being able to slowly sit into it? Or do you prefer having the block of everything and knowing the story?
Well, I think like when I pitch out pilots, I don't pitch out a pilot without knowing what I want the entire season to be.
And then
themes for like two or three. But but that will always alter. I mean, once it takes on a life of its own, then things shift and change and you bob and weave. But like you kind of have to know where things are going or where you hope to take them. Because otherwise you're just writing a movie. I've been in circumstances where early in my career I've staffed on shows where the pilot was really good and they're like, I don't know what happens. And then you're like, uh-oh. Because you need to know where you're hoping to go. And then if it doesn't work, then through that, you figure out what does work.
Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Well, it's similar to our process when we're getting the scripts, because obviously we don't know the full character arc when we're doing a TV show, and we'll sort of have an idea of where we think it's going based on our conversations with the producers and the writers and the scripts that we have. But then inevitably you get a script and you go, oh, I wish I would have known that three episodes ago.
Yeah.
Okay, let me see how I can navigate and sort of readjust what I'm doing to fit this. And it's that's why I love TV, because it's a fun game you get to play, as it were.
Well, the cool thing about that is like let's say you do get a script, you're like, hey, I didn't know that would happen. We probably didn't know that would happen. But all the amazing writers that you assemble pull from their lives, and you're in the writer's room telling stories about your life and like, oh, that reminds me of when this happened to me and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, holy cow, can we work that into the script? And then a new thing happens to Clary. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's, I mean, TV, I like the regularity of TV, quite frankly. Like, I would say I prefer, I like them both. I think I prefer TV simply because in the past, at least historically, writers have been in charge of television. Then you become the executive producers and the showrunners. Whereas in film, I love the experience as well, but you sort of hand it off and you're like, all right, I hope it turns out okay.
Yeah.
And I've been fortunate in that respect, but you know.
Yeah. And it's nice to be able to build that, you know, for people who love stories as much as we do, to be able to build that longevity and keep building upon and, you know, creating depth in these characters that you live with for so many years.
And also, hell, for having a job for a longer period of time for me is great. I love
it's
that.
It's true.
Awesome.
Yeah, seriously. It's, yeah, the hardest thing for me was like you go from a steady gig as a lawyer with a family that wants you to have a steady gig to the being comfortable with the unknown, which is a constant struggle for me.
Yeah.
You know, I've been doing this for 20 years and I've been making my living at it for 20 years and I've been very lucky and grateful. And I still go, okay, I just turned that in. What's next? Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. And then the next thing happens.
Yeah.
But it's like that internal panic where you're like, okay, no, things are fine. And I think all of you guys are working with friends of mine. Like is Anna Fricke involved in Walker right now?
Yeah.
Is she involved in your...
She's one of our producers.
Anna and I... Yeah, she's amazing. She and I were on Privilege together under Rena Mamoun, and she's... Anna's brilliant.
I love Anna.
And Dom, you did City of Angels, right?
I did.
Kendall Nichols.
Okay.
I think was your... She was your AD, one of your ADs.
Yeah. Yes, I know Kendall. Yeah.
And she's a dear, dear friend of ours.
No
and she's awesome.
Way.
So I love when all of my friends work with all of my friends and everybody gets to know each other. It's like, that's the best part about this, where you go through for 20 years and like everybody crosses and everybody gets to know each other. And hopefully the good people find each other.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's lovely.
Yeah.
I think that's great. So,
well, that is great.
And, you know, I'm really grateful that our paths crossed, and let's hope it's not the last time.
Yeah.
They will again. They will again. In fact, I'll be honest. One of my fiance's favorite channels is Hallmark. And apparently there's a Hallmark movie that he's like, that's Cat's movie. Let's watch it together.
Yeah.
So I think we're watching it this week.
Nice. Well, let me know what you think. It's a lot of fun. It's a really sweet movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's like our nightcap.
That's so great. Sweet. I actually don't think there's a better way to draw this to an end. What a wonderful, we don't want to take up any more of your time and what a wonderful way to round this out. Michael, it has been such a joy to talk to you again. Thank you
same
so
here.
Much.
Same
Thank
here.
You for...
So proud of you guys. Thanks for having me. This has been great.
Back at ya.
Return to the Shadows is hosted and executive produced by Catherine McNamara and Dominic Sherwood. Our executive producer is Ling Lee. Our senior producers are Liz Hayes and Diego Tapia, and our producers are Hannah Harris and Kristen Vermilia. Original music by Alex Kinsey and performed by Alex Kinsey and Catherine McNamara.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.